Hello, everybody, and welcome to 3-Point Perspective, the podcast about illustration, how to do it, how to make a living at it, and how to make an impact in the world with your art. I'm Jake Parker.
I'm Lee White.
And I'm Will Terry. And all three of us are professional illustrators, and we've been illustrating for about the last 25 years. We've worked with just about every major publisher in the business, and we together have published somewhere around 50 children's books, and we've all taught illustration at the university level.
Each week, we're going to tackle a different subject relating to illustration from our three perspectives. Sometimes we're going to agree, sometimes we're going to argue, but every time, you are going to learn something new.
All right. Well, today, it's my topic, and what I've been wanting to talk to you guys about, and I think what could be an interesting episode, is what are the tools, the programs, the apps, the things that we use to create the art that we do. And the way I want to frame it is we'll go category by category. And I want to ask you guys, what is non-essential, what is a nice to have, and what's absolutely essential. Does that sound good?
Sounds good.
It sounds pretty good. Right. But it's just like, oh, just like always, this would have been a good one to have a little heads up.
No, I like Hold going on. Fresh. There's no expectation of success.
I need to make a little note card here. So hold on 1 second. I should add, by the way, I just wanted to make a little side note, even though this will probably ruin it, that was probably our best intro that we've done in terms of smoothness.
Yeah. It just takes 24 episodes to get it right,
I guess. Yeah. We had the same script every week and never pulled it off.
But now people will tune us out because it just sounds like we're on, you know, we're reading something.
Hello, I am Jake Parker.
And I'm Lee White.
That sounds totally natural.
Maybe it's time to rewrite the intro since we nailed it.
Oh, that's right. We have new music. Maybe we do a new intro.
I think it needs to be more like a little cheesier, like we're the Morning Zoo crew. Hey, welcome to tuning in.
What if we just switch what people say?
Oh, same script.
So you start it. Hello, everybody. And then I'll say, I'm Jake Parker or whatever. You know what? Wasting time.
Let's have this conversation.
Why are we having this now? Okay.
Welcome to the SVS meeting. You guys are all.
This episode,
all
we just have a meeting about what we're going to do. No.
Wait, okay. Give me those things again first. Non-essential, and then sort of like to have, and then must have.
Nice to haves and essentials. Okay. Mm. Okay. Okay. So starting number one, what are the traditional tools that are absolutely essential to what you do as an illustrator? What are the traditional tools you have to have? Okay, so I'll start, and while I'm doing that, you guys can think about what you need. So
can we talk about what we used in the past and what we've learned from that too? Is that
legal? I would say current right now. You know, it's nice to talk about like how things used to be, but I think.
But what if some people are still using what I used to be using?
The people who are listening to this podcast want to know how they can be helped right now.
True. But if I go back in time, you can't stop me.
you said traditional materials. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, traditional materials and tools. You know what?
Oh, I'm done.
If you want to, Will, you can mention what you've used in the past.
I don't use traditional tools anymore.
So then you'll have nothing to add on this section.
Oh, I see. I'm sorry. You're segmenting it.
Yeah, we're segmenting it.
Oh, okay.
So we'll talk about digital next, but let's talk about traditional now. Gee, you guys get to listen to our fight too, as well.
We're supposed argue to for disagree.
Okay, so traditional tools for me personally, I just did my first children's book where it was all digital, from start to finish. But that is not normal course of action for me. Typically, everything that I do goes through some sort of traditional tool phase. Okay. So it might be that my sketchbook is where I spend a lot of time using traditional tools, and a phase later on in my illustration, I'll pass through a traditional tool phase and then bring it back into the computer. So for sketchbooks, what I like to use, what I think is actually absolutely essential, is having some sort of sketchbook pencil pen combination. And if you're going to add to that a third or a fourth thing, it would be some sort of set of gray tone markers. Okay. But essentially it's a sketchbook, a pencil, and a pen. And the reason for this is you don't need to have it charged. You don't need to have it plugged in. You can carry it with you wherever you go. And it's a way to just jot down ideas and to kind of work out ideas that you're having, or character designs that you need to do, or compositions that you need to do. And a sketchbook, I think, is absolutely essential. If you don't have a sketchbook, I think it's something that every artist needs to be working with or working in. There were years where I used just loose sheets of paper, and I was fine with that, and I would recommend that. But what happened was those loose sheets of paper stayed loose, and sometimes I would lose an illustration or a drawing or an idea that I really wanted. It was hard to like organize those things by date. So if I remembered that I did it, you know, 3 years ago, I'd have to go through a pile of papers to kind of find it. What I do now is my sketchbooks are, they all are dated at the beginning, and I keep them in a drawer stacked in order of date. So you open up the sketchbook and you can see, oh, this was started in June and it was finished in October. And then I can go to the one previous and see this one was started in, you know, April and finished in June. And it's just a good way to organize thoughts and ideas. So the sketchbooks that I use are the Moleskines. I've used all different kinds of sketchbooks, and really it just comes down to what kind of paper that you like to draw on. And I really like the Cahiers Moleskin journals, and those are flimsy, and the paper's just good enough to like keep my pencil markings and my ink markings and my markings in place. They don't smudge or bleed too much. I do have to be a little bit careful with some inks, but that particular journal or sketchbook is nice because it never feels like I have something precious that I'm carrying that I don't want to like ruin with a bad drawing. They just feel like they're a workbook that I can go in there and I can draw something nice if I want to, or I can I could just keep it loose and just have random ideas in there, and it psychologically just is like an easier way, easier tool for me to use to put ideas on paper. As far as pencils, I like to finish everything in ink. So I want a pencil that works well with ink and doesn't smudge very much with my hand. And so I use the Prismacolor Colerase colored pencils. And those are just great for sketching. I'll usually keep a X-Acto knife with me in my tool bag to sharpen those pencils when I'm on the run. Otherwise, I'll just use the pencil sharpener in the studio. And I like them because they work well with the ink. And when you ink over the top of these pencils, the lighter ones that I like using, the oranges or the vermilions or the reds, the ink is a stark contrast between the black ink with that reddish warm color, so that the two really work really well with each other and against each other. So you can use the pencil to highlight specific areas that you've inked and color them in dark red, and it makes a pop. Or if you're lightly sketching, then your eye focuses more so on the ink and not so much on the sketch. And then as far as pens that I use, I think, again, this is really up to the ability and the preference of the artist, but some sort of technical pen is, I think, essential, and then some sort of brush pen is essential. And the reason for those two is technical pens are good for going in there and writing down actual notes, writing ideas and thoughts, And I usually like a 0.3 to 0.8, something in there, maybe a 0.05 size technical pen. And what's good about that is they're just good for writing things down. And they're also good for doing like quick sketches and loose sketching things. The reason I like brush pens is you can go from thin to thick super easily. You don't have to build up the line. In one stroke, you can get a super thin line and a super thick line. If you've practiced enough and you've trained enough with it, and they're just a tool that you can bust out a really nice illustration or a really nice drawing fast with the brush pen. There's 100 different kind of brush pens. My particular favorite brush pen right now is the Copic Gassenfude nylon pen.
You just got so fancy on us. Hey, we are going to provide links for all this stuff, yeah?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What about translation for all this stuff?
In the show notes. What'd you say, Will?
What about some translation?
Okay, that's the name of the pen. It's not called anything other than that.
By the way, can I just interject that the tearing and ripping apart sounds you're hearing is from Mia, one of our assistants who's packaging right now. And we work in a functioning office.
Yeah.
So that's
this isn't a sound room.
And now she's embarrassed. Don't be embarrassed, Mia. The tearing is necessary.
She's shipping out orders from my shop. So people have ordered a drawings book or a print or something. You know, they may have gone to shop.mrjakeparker.com to order something, and she's just shipping those out. She does that once a week. It's really, really nice.
Thanks,
and
Mia.
That was some nice hidden self-promotion, Jake.
Signs.
My shop is doing really well, and I just wanted you to know that.
All right. So those are my essentials. What are your guys' essentials? We'll ask you that. And then I'm going to ask you, what are your nice-to-haves? And then I'm going to ask you what's non-essential, if there is anything. Okay. So Will, what's essential traditionally? Anything?
Nothing.
Okay.
Well, I guess the only thing for Will would be a traditional aesthetic that he brought with him, because his digital stuff is so influenced by that, but that's kind of a ethereal way to bring that in.
Well, yeah let's not.
I'm just keeping it real.
All right, Lee, what about you?
I got a big list. Okay. So for sketching, and most of my tools are pretty similar between sketching and actually doing real paintings, but there's a couple of extra stuff when it's going to bigger stuff and more finished paintings. For just sketchbook work and portable work, I use essential stuff would be a mechanical pencil. There's nothing worse. If you guys feel the same way, there's nothing worse than trying to draw with a dull pencil. It's the grossest feeling.
Yeah, I agree.
You do? Okay, good. Because I feel like that it's almost a visceral sensation, kind of like the nails on a chalkboard. Like, I love drawing, especially on a textured kind of watercolor paper, like a cold press paper, and just the sound that it makes. Like, I love the resistance on that pencil. But man, you get a dull pencil, it is just an ugly line. And I see a lot of people not sharpening their pencils, and then it goes from this nice line quality to a crappy line quality. And so just pay attention to that. But the mechanical pencil gets rid of that. I can't remember which size. I think it's just the standard, like 0.5, 0.05. I can't remember which one that one is, but whatever the standard one that comes, like if you just bought a pencil from, you know, Office Depot. I don't have a favorite one. Any of them work. The cheap ones, the expensive ones, I don't care which one it is, but it's a nice pencil to have. I use a horizontal watercolor sketchbook. I don't know why the one that I really like is the Moleskine, and that's it has watercolor paper in it. Mm-hmm. But it's a horizontal format, and it's just a much different drawing experience if you have only had, book kind of letter 8.5 by 11 styled sketchbooks. The wide one is awesome, because when you open it up, it is so wide that it just changed in my approach to sketching entirely when I had that horizontal space on there. So that's a good one. There's another brand. I'm looking for the actual brand. Maybe I'll have it in the links. I can't find it, but there's kind of a knockoff of the Moleskine watercolor one. The Moleskine watercolor sketchbook's sort of expensive, and I found a knockoff one, and it's pretty good too. Those papers aren't the greatest in there, so I will add this one extra little thing. Maybe that should be in the nice to have one, but I like, if I have a certain kind of paper that I'm painting on in the studio, I like to make my own sketchbook with that exact kind of paper, because then you're dealing with a one-to-one, like your practice starts to inform how the real paper behaves. Because in watercolor, the paper is everything. You can use cheap paint, you can use cheap brushes, but the paper dictates everything. So just a little side note there. I use M. Graham watercolor paints for my travel stuff as well as studio stuff. And the reason I use M. Graham is because it re-wets really easily. If I spray it with a little spritzer, water spritzer, it'll go almost back to fresh paint, like if I just poured it out, which is really good if you're traveling. Some other brands like Winsor Newton, I love Winsor Newton paints. They're great, but they do not re-wet very well at all. But that's typically the brand that everyone buys when they're starting watercolor. And then they try to make a sketchbook or a portable version of that. And then they get that paint and it doesn't re-wet. It doesn't work. I use a lot of watercolor pencils. Any brand has been acceptable. And I use those a lot mixed with the watercolor. And the difference between that and a regular pencil is once the surface is wet, when you lay it down, a lot of pigment gets released. It's really cool. And you can draw on wet paper. So I'll be painting and then I'll grab a pencil and I'll draw right into the wet and it kind of bleeds a little bit. It's pretty. I also use the color race, like Jake was talking about. I only use the Tuscan red or the indigo. Those are the two colors that I think are pleasing. Some of the other ones are a little too saturated for my tastes, but all of them work really well. It's a really nice pencil. A beat up dip pen. The reason I say beat up dip pen is because when you first get a dip pen, there's a little bit of oil on it from when it was made in the factory or wherever. And it'll kind of repel paint. And so you almost have to beat them up. I tell people to wash them with a little bit of vinegar and water when you first get them, and that gets all the oil off of them, or even dish soap. And and then all of a sudden it'll start to accept paint.
Don't use a lighter. I've seen that as an option. And
oh, really? Actually,
To burn off that oil, and it's a good way to ruin your nib.
Mm. I've never seen that. Vinegar works great because it's a little bit acidic, but a good dip pen is kind of like a guitar. Like a new guitar is okay, an old guitar is awesome. Like you just can't get the same quality with something that's brand new. And so my dip pens are probably 6 or 7 years old now, and they are awesome. They work really good. The next thing that I use a lot of is a chip brush. A lot of people aren't familiar with that term, but it is the worst, like crappiest bristle brush from Michaels. If you go to like Michaels art store or craft store, it's even better at a craft store, not an art store, because art stores are expensive, so I avoid them. But you can get them at Home Depot or whatever too. They are just the worst brushes. And I'll post a picture on one if you haven't seen one, maybe onto the notes or whatever. But I buy those cheap brushes. They're like 59 cents for the small size and then 79 cents for the bigger size. And then I take them out and I run over them with my car and I scrape them on the sidewalk. I want those things to be beat to a pulp. And the kind of strokes you can get with those brushes is unlike anything else. You can get kind of Chinese calligraphy looking with it. You can get really smooth washes with them. And, you don't need a $100 paintbrush or $200 paintbrush. A lot of times people, for some reason, buy expensive stuff for watercolor and you don't need it. So that's the same stuff that I use when I'm going to do studio painting, except for I have a couple more essential things. One of them, big one, is the incredible art board. That is a big plastic kind of feeling board that you can staple into, because I don't have any patience for prep work. I hate that kind of stuff. Like when you used to gesso when we were in school, I just hated all that stuff. I want to be painting. I don't want to be sanding something. Mm-hmm. So with watercolor, there's the process where you got to tape it down to the board and wet it and do all that stuff. Stretch it is what they're calling it. I just wet it and then I just staple it straight to this board. And this board can accept staples over and over. I've had the same board for probably 7 years. So it's really good and really, really nice.
Cool.
Yeah, and you can just go straight into it. Like I'll have a drawing down, I'll wet the paper, I'll stape it all, and then it's still sort of wet. I'll go ahead and start painting on it right there. So it's between the time where I have like an idea to paint something and when I'm actually painting is like 5 minutes. So very, very fast. White acrylic ink I use quite a bit, and I use that in combination with the dip pen. And that's just a fantastic, it's very opaque. I think the kind I'm using now is Liquitex. But it's very opaque, and it's great to get that full opaque white, because watercolor, if you're a purist, you're probably cringing right now, but I'm not a purist. I mix everything in there. And it, you can get back to white pretty easy. And then I'll paint on top of it because it's acrylic base. I use a lot of gouache for details, and I don't love gouache. I'm not a very good gouache painter, but I use it for opaque details on top of the watercolor base. Same thing, I use gesso that I'll paint on top of watercolor, and then I'll paint on top of that even some more. The paper that I use for studio-based painting is Canson Montval, and it's a very cheap student-grade paper, but I really like it because it has a medium to a lot of sizing, which means that the water doesn't go into the paper too much, and you can do all kinds of effects with that. It makes it a little harder to work with, so it just depends on your style. That's it.
That's it?
Oh.
That's all?
That's all. That's all.
Those are the essentials.
It's just, I mean, those, it's only like 10 things or 11 things or whatever, but I have a little grouping of those things for travel. I got the big grouping of those things for the studio, mm-hmm. and I don't like to, you know, need a bunch of stuff. And so between mm-hmm. those things, I can make almost any painting.
No, I mean, it sounds a lot when you're describing it, but if we were to see that like laid out in front of us, it would really be a handful.
Oh yeah. It's not much at all.
A handful of things.
Yeah.
Okay, hold on, so
let me interject here.
Yeah.
Even though I'm not working traditionally right now, I want to speak in generalities because I want to reinforce some of the stuff that Lee said, which is you mentioned like quality a little bit in there, Lee, right?
What do you mean?
The quality of products that you get.
Oh, yeah.
When I was teaching at UVU, I would have students that would, you know, I was teaching an acrylic class or an oil class, and I would have students that would be using tools that, you know, in the academic sense, you could call it a brush that they had. You could call it paper or canvas, but the yeah. quality of the materials was so bad that I would try to take over, you know, and take their brush and like, I can't show you. I'm not going to be able to show you how to work with this because the tools are so bad. And so in general, I want to say there are times where you can cut corners, but there's times where you can't. And just a few dealing with acrylics and oils are, I'd find that people would cheapen out on the quality of the paint that they would buy, or the brand. So they would, you know, like Winsor & Newton makes several different qualities. They'll make the Galleria brand, which is the student version or student grade. And to me, it's, they really shouldn't, well, they shouldn't call it student because then students think that that's what you should get. Cause hey, I'm a student. What it should be called is, you know, super thin paint, medium thickness and really heavy thickness paint. Cause sometimes a thin paint can actually work for the type of work that you're trying to do, but sometimes it's a total disaster to use watered down paint. And that's basically what it is. The student grades are typically watered down. And so when you want to paint with a thicker impasto, you just can't do it with that kind of paint. Or
I should add that they do make the thicker ones for student grade, but I agree with Will. It depends on, that's where a good teacher comes in, is you can say which product is okay to get the cheap thing, right, and which one's not. Right. And so typically, even if you're using the impasto ones where they're really thick bodied acrylic, say, for example, what they do is they take out pigment, which is expensive, and they put in fillers. So it feels the same, but it doesn't work the same.
Right, right. And the same with brushes. If you cheapen up on brushes, you sometimes, and let's say it's a brush that's supposed to come to a fine point or supposed to allow you to make a nice line, a graceful line, but it just absolutely won't do that because it's cheap. I don't know why, you know, I don't know really what goes into building a more expensive brush. I know the natural fibers versus synthetic sometimes is it. I found that using the higher end synthetic fibers worked just fine for me, but I was dry brushing and I would try to teach that technique and I would need a brush that could really stand up to the abuse that you put on it when you're doing those kinds of things. So another one that I would see people cheapening up on is the paper. They would go for a low weight paper because it's cheaper versus a heavier weight paper. You know, if you're, and you could speak to this, Lee, more than I could, but for watercolor, I found that the heavier, there's a reason that people spend a lot more on paper. For acrylic, a lot of it depends on what you're going to do with it. If the cheaper paper gives you the results that you're looking for, then that's great. You know, you can get away with cheaper. But if spending a little bit more makes a big difference in the results that you can get, you're going to have to find the money to get that. And I would have students a lot of times going, well, I just can't do what you're doing. And I would have to explain, that's because I couldn't do what you're trying to do with your equipment. And so you're going to have to forego a latte or something, you know.
Well, I mean, it brings up a great point. And like I said, that's where a really good teacher, even maybe more so than showing you how to paint, is just because when you're dealing with traditional stuff, there's physical properties. There's, you know, there's tints and there's covering strength and there's all pigment strength and all this stuff. And if you, a good teacher can simplify that. When you go into an art store now, it's chaos. There's billion projects in there. How do you know what you're going to buy? Right. And I used to do this little demo on the first day of my painting class. It was traditional painting that I would bring these two magentas over, and I'm trying to think of which ones they were, because I could tell you right now. Oh, quinacridone magenta and alizarin crimson. They look almost the same if you just pour them out of the tube. Well, if you mix them with white, or if you mix them with any other color, the alizarin crimson dulls down. Mm-hmm. And the quinacridone magenta goes to almost a fluorescent color if you mix a little bit of white into it, or let's say you mix it with a blue, it becomes this really bright, vibrant purple that you cannot get with the alizarin crimson. Not that it's better, it just depends on which color you want to get. But if you buy the alizarin crimson saying, oh, that one's close to, you know, looks close to the other color, it doesn't mix the same.
Right.
And so that's where a good teacher can, you know, speed up your skill set.
A friend of mine at Blue Sky tell me, he said, when you're an artist, in every aspect of your life, you have to think like you're, maybe you don't even have to think this way. You actually are poor, but you have to think like you're on budget and you're saving, except for when it comes to your art supplies. There, you have to shift your mindset that you're a millionaire, that money doesn't matter, and you're going to buy the best tools. And like Will said, yeah, that might mean there's some sacrifice. That might mean going without Netflix for 6 months. Who knows what you need to cut out of your life in order to afford the art supplies that you need to
Overwatch.
Get in order to create. Yeah, yeah. So, cool. Do we want to move on to the next one? To the next section. Did you guys have anything else you wanted to add to traditional?
I think I was pretty good there. No. Yeah.
Is there any, I guess, non-essential traditional things? Like, you just absolutely don't need these, even though people say you might.
Oh, yeah. That's a good way to go on that one. One of the things, like going back to the art store, you see a million paints. And that's designed to separate you from your money. So, where you can save money is in understanding how to mix paints and getting a good color list. I actually have a color list on my smooth blends in acrylic dry brush technique class at svslearn.com. But if you,
nice.
If anybody wants to email me,
how many pigments is it?
I'm not looking at it right now, but I would guess I could get by with, you know, 7 to 10 different tubes of paint.
Yeah, I'll put my palette on there too, because I only use 7 colors. Yeah. I never go outside that 7 color palette, and that's an extreme palette.
Yeah, and if you go into the store, there's 100 of each brand or 50 of each brand.
Right. I'll tell you an interesting little story. My mom was taking a watercolor class, and I lived 3,000 miles away from her, so I couldn't really go over it. And she'd already enrolled in this class, so she goes to class. She came home with a 21 paint list, never painted before in watercolor. And I was just horrified.
And sometimes
that she was
the teachers will send students to go after those too.
No, that's what it was. It was 21 oh, wow. colors from the teacher, and you know, it's like a 10-week class for beginners. And I was just thinking, I don't even know what I would do with 21 paints.
Right. Well, and maybe we should explain a little. Go just briefly into what's happening there. You know, they're mixing the paint for you, and it's going to take it. each one of those, you have, you know, primary colors, you have secondary, and you have tertiary colors, and they're mixing way into those tertiary colors to where they're not going to fit your palette most of the time, or they're just going to be unnecessary, because with a little white or a little of another color, you can make the exact color that they were mixing up.
Right, right. And the more important thing that I like to say with that is that if you have the small number of paints, like Will's talking about or what I'm talking about, when you make a body of work, not just one painting, but say 10 paintings, and you're going to have a show, because you use these same 5 to 7 pigments, your work will have a harmony as a whole, and it won't look like one painting is painted by a different person than the next, because that can happen. If you're using 21 paints, those saturation levels and the value levels can be all over the place. But if you use 5 to 7, it almost doesn't matter what color you use in a series of paintings, they'll all hold together really nice.
That's a good point. And then is there any nice to haves? Like, it's not totally essential, but you just really like having this particular thing or that particular tool?
My electronic drawing desk is a sweet addition to the studio.
You got to hear about this again.
Here we go. Oh man. Oh yeah. I'm just now getting into using it. And it's just fantastic because I can raise it and lower it to the exact thing that I'm working on. So if I'm working on a big canvas, I can lower it down so the top of the canvas is at my hand level instead of me, you know, reaching up in the air or having to turn it upside down, which I used to have to do to be able to reach it. And so it's just, it's awesome, but you can go on Craigslist. I mean, I only paid $350, $375 or something for like a couple $1,000 retail desk that's hydraulic and it moves up and down with a button. So that's a bonus. It's not essential. I haven't had one up to this point, but man, it's a luxury.
Mm-hmm. My nice to have is my pencil sharpener, and this is an old Panasonic electric pencil sharpener. It's actually the Autostop KP77N. It's a particular model. It looks like something from an 80s classroom, because it was, and the only ones you can find online today are either, you know, from an old office, you know, that's on eBay that they're getting rid of stuff, or an old school sale or something like that. But this pencil sharpener sharpens the pencils at such an angle that they're just sharper than anything that's new and current today. I don't know what degree of angle that is, but it's just a nice sharp point. It's industrial strength. It's got, you know, the torque on that engine inside of that pencil sharpener is like incredible. I could probably sharpen a metal screw in there with how much strength that thing has. So I love my pencil sharpener. Even though that's an electronic device, it's for a traditional tool. So
I would say that's an essential.
Yeah. And then I would say another nice to have, though not essential, is a full set of Copic markers. Just because, you know, anything from like 50 to 150 or even the full 300. I don't have the full 300, but a nice set of markers, because usually there's colors you can get that you can't get with watercolors. You can't get with one of those little watercolor sets or mixing it. There's just some really nice bright sharp colors that you could do with those, and you can lay them in quick and they're clean and you don't have to wait for things to dry or anything like that. So I like having a set of markers, and I should add another. I would say this is essential for me. I forgot to mention this. It's a compact watercolor set with a water brush. Like a water brush pen. And I love that because when I'm in my sketchbook or I'm traveling or anything like that, and I want to jot down an idea or do something that's actually has a full range of colors, this little watercolor set can get you, it is the equivalent of carrying, you know, 50 markers, but it's in something that's the size of like a large wallet, you know, or a small, like, compact, right? Or a large compact. And what it is, it's got these little watercolor biscuits in them. Is that what they're called? Tiles? I don't know.
Sure, biscuit.
Biscuit, right? And and then you have this pen, which actually it's like a brush pen, but it holds water inside the inside this reservoir in the handle. And so you don't even have to like clean out your brush in a little cup of water or a little jar of water. You just flush it out when you want to change the color, and then you can mix your colors right there in the set, in the watercolor set, and apply it to your paper, and it just gets a nice cool effect, and you get the colors that you need. Definitely pair that with a brush pen or a pen that is waterproof. And so that's why I like using the Copic Gassinfude brush pen, because it's waterproof. Once that stroke is down and it's dry, water's not going to do anything to it. So there's other pens where you could start doing stuff with that, and then your black is bleeding into everything. So you got to watch out for that.
Hey, so I like the markers too. Just one little addition to what Jake's saying there. Just a six pack carrier of, you know, you buy a six pack at the store of your favorite soft drink, right? And that's a great carrying case for markers. I've had the same little six pack organized markers for years, and it's really good because it's got the handle and stuff like that. It's not good for you going on a plane or whatever, but I'm just saying to have around the studio or to drag around sketching or whatever. It's been fantastic for just carrying around quite a few markers and still keeping them organized and being able to grab the right one.
Cool. Okay, should we move on to digital tools? Will, you've been
I got my freak on with the traditional there a little bit. I was reminiscing. I painted for 18 years.
That's true. So what is the essential digital tools / programs that is absolutely like every illustrator needs to have?
Are you asking me?
Yep. What is it, Will?
Well, I can't speak for everybody because the comic book people, they...
I'm asking, what is it for you?
Oh, for me. Okay, because you said what everybody needs to have, and I took you.
Okay, what everybody who wants to do what you do needs to have.
Getting so specific. Mr. Literal.
It's going to be pretty simple. Unlike these long lists that Jake and Lee gave you for traditional, this is going to be quite simple. It's a computer with a Cintiq monitor hooked up to it and an iPad Pro with the Apple Pencil and Procreate and Photoshop. So two programs, Photoshop, Procreate, iPad Pro, computer. Now, I could tell you why.
Yeah, let's hear it.
I love the iPad Pro. For anybody who's heard me talk about it on my YouTube channel, it changed everything. And I can work anywhere on this thing, but I don't find for myself that taking my illustrations all the way to finish works as well as the combo with the Cintiq and Photoshop. So people on a budget, you know, I mean, like when I was coming out of school, there's no way I could have afforded this, both of these devices and the programs and everything. The question I get asked all the time is, if you had to pick one, which one would it be? If I had to pick one, it would probably be a Cintiq or a Cintiq knockoff. And Cintiq is, if you're not familiar with that, it's made by Wacom. And it's a drawing monitor, a monitor that you draw on, unlike the tablet. I used to use a tablet and I couldn't draw on it. I never developed the hand-eye coordination to draw somewhere else and looking up at a screen and have that work. I think I only know one person, and that's Jim Madsen, who prefers the Wacom Intuos over the Cintiq monitor.
Jed Henry. Oh,
does
he?
Okay.
He does that.
Jed Henry. Yeah. So if I had to pick one, it would be the Cintiq and Photoshop, and only because I am very familiar with Photoshop and it can do, I learned Photoshop over a decade. Over messing around with it for a decade, and now everything is just so easy that I would never switch. However, I'm aware that there are other software products out there that other people just love. So I'm not saying that Photoshop is better than those. That's just the one that I default to because I've learned it really well. And because I don't find that I'm limited. I feel like I can do everything I want to in that program. On the iPad, the reason that I love the iPad is, you know, the Cintiq, I'm tethered to my office. So I have to be here. I have to be where it is. And I have to be sitting in the same chair. If I go home, I can be on the iPad anywhere and I can draw. I can completely control my drawings. I can now with Procreate, they've got these new tools where they've got Liquify in there. So you can bump and push and expand and contract and distort your drawing. Man, there's so much in this because I feel like the teacher in me feels like I have to say also, like, if you're a student, don't go to digital right away. Am I allowed to say that on this one, to go into that real quick?
Sure.
I mean, because like if it were me, if I was advising up and comers or beginners, I would say go with the traditional and draw first and learn by your mistakes more. Digital is, because of all the editing possibilities, it's really hard to develop a process from the beginning with digital unless you go into it purposely limiting what tools you're going to use. In other words, what the problem that most students have is they start a process or they start a drawing or a painting digitally, and then they might come up with something that they kind of like, but they can't reproduce that because the amount of steps and the amount of tools that they use to get there is so vast, because why not, right? You've got them, that they can't get to that same process again. And they are completely lost if they go traditional. I could go back to traditional tomorrow because I had such a foundation in it.
I guess we should add that we went to the Adobe conference, and supposedly this year they're coming out with an actual usable version of Photoshop for the iPad. Are you looking forward to that,
no.
Will?
I don't think that it's going to. I my prediction is that there's so many controls in Photoshop that yes, they'll make it work, but to get to those tools will be such a pain in the butt. That Procreate was designed by a six man and woman team. I don't know the breakdown there, from out of Tasmania. And I'm sure they're a much bigger company now, but they designed Procreate for the iPad specifically. So you can't get it for Android. And the tools are so lightweight, and they're so, because it was designed for the iPad, it's just so, you're just a click away from, you know, or one or two touches away from every tool in the program. And I have a feeling, I've seen other Adobe products that they've tried to do for iPad, and they just seem more clunky.
But they got a couple people on staff now that they didn't have before that we know, and they, I don't know. I'm going to wait and see, because
that's just my prediction. I hope I'm wrong. But the other thing is, there's so much more that it can do, that in order for them to get all that, maybe they'll strip it down in some ways. But that other program they revealed, Gemini
or something.
Yeah, that one I'm really looking forward to. That's a natural media program. The watercolor engine in that looked amazing. So I hope I'm wrong, and it would be neat, but to me, the way that I'm using the iPad is I'm doing all of my initial, thumbnails. I'm doing my comp sketches. I'm working up to finished sketches, completely, sending them to my editor from the iPad, and then getting feedback. And then I'm starting the process to, you know, get them ready and prepping them for paint. If I'm going to work, in my color style, then I export the Photoshop file. So it will export the layers in Photoshop. I'll export that to the Photoshop and work on my Cintiq and color it. And if I'm doing the other, my more pencil crosshatch style, I'll do the same thing. I'll get it to a point where the pencil work is completely finished, and then I'll just export and do some quick color over it in Photoshop. Not that you can't do the color, you can do everything in Procreate, but for me, the iPad screen isn't as true to color as the Cintiq. The Cintiq is, and this is a problem that Wacom has actually talked about. They've overbuilt these Cintiqs to where they're just super reliable. The color is, I mean, they've, it's a professional, super professional tool. So the colors are accurate, and designed for, you know, with that in mind. So it's probably one of the most color accurate screens you can buy on the market. And so the luxury for me is having both. If my iPad broke tomorrow, I'd that'd be the first thing I'd buy is go get another one, you know?
Mm-hmm. What about for you, Lee?
I'm kind of right there, with Will, same tools, except for I added one thing, to my portable studio, which is I'm painting with the iPad as well, but I just could not get used to I'm so used to having my left hand on a keyboard, and that just comes from my Cintiq process that I bought just a Bluetooth keyboard, and that changed everything for me. It very much mimics my Cintiq setup in the studio, and just kind of made everything a lot easier.
For the iPad?
Yeah. So I use the iPad. When I'm doing the iPad, I use it in conjunction with the MacBook Pro. And so I have kind of two screens going at once. And then I've got the external keyboard. And so I'm just using the Cintiq. I'm using the iPad Pro sort of like a Cintiq, portable Cintiq. I don't sketch in dedicated sketch programs like Will's talking about. I sketch just straight in Photoshop, and I draw and do everything in Photoshop.
So what are you using the iPad for?
I don't know. No, I'm using it for I'm using it as a Cintiq. If I'm portable, I'm drawing on the iPad.
It does work as a tray for your food.
Yeah. Put my coffee on it.
What iPad program do you draw in?
Some software called, what's it called? AstroPad. And so I've got the laptop right there. And so Photoshop is what I'm drawing in on the iPad. It's just tethered to my MacBook Pro laptop.
I get it. Yeah. Okay. So I finally got an iPad as like my end of the year gift to myself for doing a good job this year. You know, you got to reward yourself, right? So I got the newest iPad, the one without the button on it. And this thing, I've been doing more drawing at home than I have in the last couple of years, because it makes it so easy to just sit on the couch and do a nice, like, finished piece. And last night I was up until midnight. I didn't even look at the clock. And I usually go to bed at 9:30, right? I'm up till midnight drawing, and I'm like, oh my gosh, the hours went away because I was so focused in it. And so I cannot recommend this new version of the iPad enough. The pencil like sticks right to the side of it and charges, which that was a huge turnoff for the previous version of the iPad, where you had to like stick it out the side and it could break really easy.
Now I'm discontent with my iPad.
But Jake, you do owe me an apology.
I'm sorry, Will, for whatever for what.
Well, you were making fun of me for how much gushing I was doing over the iPad, and now all for the last 2 weeks, all I've heard is these testimonials that would make a great, you know, Apple commercial every day.
I don't think I made fun of you, did I? I think I just said it's not for me.
Yeah, but it's in your voice. It's the tone. It's the tone.
There were times where you were like, it's the elitist mentality that you'd have over when, you know, after you finish drawing.
I will say this, that since I've gotten it, my sketchbook has been like looking longingly at me from across the room. Are you ever going to use me again? I will. I'm coming back to you, sketchbook.
I'm going to put you guys to shame because I'm now drawing on my iWatch.
What?
That was my year-end gift to myself, is the iWatch 4.
I actually have been drawing while we're talking on the iPad. It's that good. So I think, honestly, though, at the end of the day, it's a nice to have. I think essential, though, is Photoshop, on some sort of computer. I prefer Macs. I'm in that ecosystem. I switched to Mac 10 years ago because I just didn't want to spend any more time on customer service or, you know, for repairs and all that stuff. I added up the time for 2 years straight how much I was on the phone, like trying to fix stuff with my PC, and it was equal to about 2 weeks worth of work per year. There's just the amount of hours. And so I don't have that when I'm on a Mac now. And some people love fixing PCs and love, you know, fine tuning them and spending time doing that. And if that's cool and you like working on a computer, then go that route. But if you just want to work with your computer, then I would just recommend getting the computer that's going to allow you to do that the best. So I'll leave it at that. And then a Cintiq paired with that computer is, I think, essential for illustration because, again, like Will said, the color, and Will said also, like, just the ability to work with the full Photoshop on the Cintiq. So everything that I do kind of goes through that last phase of being in Photoshop and color correcting and working on, you know, fine tuning stuff. And if there's ever fixes, it's so easy to fix stuff in Photoshop. So you got to learn Photoshop. You got to get that. I right now though am working on Photoshop 6. I haven't upgraded to the subscription, the CC, because Photoshop 6 has all I ever need and wanted. And I have used CC on my laptop that I've had. And I could see like the benefits and easy to file share and things like that. But I think essential is some version of Photoshop. And if you can, you know, if you can get away with it, you know, get an older piece of Photoshop. That said, my Cintiq is 11 years old. My computer is 5 years old, I think. And I'm in this weird position now where if I update the iOS, my Cintiq won't work anymore. And if I get a new Cintiq, I have to update my iOS. So, and the Cintiq's working fine and my computer's working fine. So I'm sort of in this 2012-13 version of
and you don't want iOS. To let them win.
I don't want to let them win. No, I just don't want to spend the money if I don't have to, right? Everything's working fine. Eventually, though, I know like someday my computer just won't start or the Cintiq just won't turn on, and then I'll just have to replace the whole setup. But do what you got to do. Work, you know, there's a designer that I follow, and you know, years ago he had to get a computer. This is his story. He had to get a computer to in order to do graphic design work. And so he went for summer up to Alaska and worked at one of these resorts and washed dishes and cleaned and saved up every last penny. And he spent it all on his like awesome computer set. And that's what got him going to being a designer is having those tools. So I've always been sort of the same way. Like, if I needed a specific thing, then I would do the extra jobs, do the night jobs, do whatever I needed in order to save up that money to buy the specific tool that I needed to use. And so I would have access to it and create the artwork that at the professional level that I wanted to create it. So that's my essentials is Photoshop, is Cintiq, is a computer. A nice to have is the iPad. And I think non-essential, a non-essential would be, I don't know. I will say this though, another probably essential thing to have is some sort of scanner. You're going to need a scanner, and the Epsons are the best scanners, regardless of what model you get. They all use sort of the same scanning technology. So I would recommend getting some sort of Epson scanner. If you're going to work traditionally and you want to bring that stuff into Photoshop. So that's an essential.
I have another essential now that you reminded me of that, and that is a good studio printer. I know a lot of people are probably sitting there listening to this going, oh my God, you know, you start pull out the calculator and start adding all these costs up. But you, we didn't all acquire these at one time. We didn't just go to the store and buy all this stuff. This is accumulated, right? I mean, you guys bought it over years. The printer is something that I use quite a bit for both professional income, and I have a commercial grade printer that makes prints and all that stuff. And so it's already paid for itself many, many times over. So it doesn't cost me anything. But more importantly, I use it for printing out. Most of the time I do sketches in my sketchbook or whatever to make a little watercolor study. And then I have that in Photoshop and I lighten it quite a bit. So it's only like 10% showing. And I print it out on my watercolor paper from my printer in the studio. And that is a huge time saver. I can't stand getting a nice little sketch and then trying to redraw that sketch big. It just loses so much. And so that's how I use the printer. It prints out right on the paper, and then I can just go to town, and it's the exact loose sketch that I started with that I like so much.
That is so important, by the way, is not losing your original sketch, the little magic. I can't stress that enough. You can't recreate the little magic things and the spatial relationships that you initially had as you're working.
Yeah. It's even hard to do it with it already there. Even on the piece of paper, it's hard to keep it, but much less redraw it from scratch.
I would do that. I would put that into the nice to have thing of the printer. Not essential, but it is when you can afford it and when you're in a position to, I would definitely get a good printer.
We should recommend, like, a lot of this stuff you can get used, and you can get, and people take pretty good care of this stuff. I got my first commercial grade printer was used, a big large format Epson. My first Cintiq, two Cintiqs were used, and they were super cheap. So I've bought a ton of stuff. My laptop that I'm using right now was used. I mean, there's a ton of stuff.
The Cintiq I'm using right now was used. And it's about 9 years old, and there's no sign of there's nothing wrong with it at all. I've heard of people getting dead pixels. I don't have any on this one. That's actually one of the problems that Wacom's going through right now, is they're not breaking fast enough for people to need to replace them.
Mine's cracked all the way through, and I still work with it.
Oh, that's right. You said, and yours is a newer one. And we were wondering, are the newer ones maybe not made as well as the older ones, or I don't know.
Well, it was weird. Mine broke because I had my left hand just resting on it. I was not leaning on it or anything, but I guess it hit like an air pocket underneath the glass or some kind of little void, which allowed my hand to, you know, depress into the glass, made a little bitty pop, kind of like when a rock hits your windshield in your car. And then that crack just snaked all the way across the Cintiq. But luckily the crack's not in the drawing area that I typically use, and so I don't care.
Yeah, I mean, it's such an expensive thing to replace that you're sitting there asking yourself, do I have to replace this? Can I live with this? Right?
That where you are. Yeah, I mean, I called them, and they said $800 to fix the crack. I said, okay, I'm gonna draw with the crack in there.
Well, and Jake's surface is like sandpaper. I love to hear him draw on his.
Oh, that makes that swishing sound.
Tina around the middle of it. It's just good texture for my style. All right.
Wait, can I ask you one quick question, Jake?
Yeah.
If you had to pick one, the iPad Pro or your Cintiq Photoshop combo, which would it be? If you could only have one.
Yeah, probably the computer Cintiq combo, because that's ultimately, like, that's where my professional work happens, and I need I would need a computer that could store like all the files and everything. I know I'd run out of room pretty quick on my iPad if I was doing, you know, 5 children's books over the years. Yeah. So I would probably say too, like, if you're starting out, you know, iPad is probably designed to last 3 or 4 years before Apple's going to want you to get a new one. And the Cintiq and the desktop are probably designed to last a lot longer.
That's a really good point. So really, it could be considered more economical to go with the computer. Well, you're laying out a lot more than that iPad. The problem with the iPad too is the screen just isn't big enough. Even on the big iPad, it's just not big enough to really see your work. I don't know. How do you feel, Lee, about that?
I mean, I think we all agree on the same thing, that you've got that the Cintiq Photoshop computer combo is kind of the baseline. That's what we're talking about here. Would you guys agree with that? That's kind of the standard. And, you know, for those of you guys who listen and who are trying to weigh which one of these things do I buy, that's going to be the grouping I think that's going to serve most people the best. And you don't want to be cheap to the point of hurting the work. And I have seen a lot of students do that, where they'll take a $2,000 class, but then they miss a class because they don't have $5 for a bus fare or some other little thing. They didn't buy the you know, $4 tube of paint for the $2,000 class. And so, you know, you got to weigh all your options and your, you know, your resources and all that stuff. But you have to, at some point, spend the money and get something that's going to work. Even if you get it used, I mean, you can get it discounts. I'm not saying you got to go to the Apple store, pay the premium, but don't hurt yourself, I guess, is where I'm going with that.
I did do a review of a Huion. Yenova. There's a Huion. It was good. It's definitely more like your first car. The Wacom Cintiq is more like, you know, the luxury sedan or the sports car. But it worked, but you could tell everything was cheap on it, and you wondered like how long it would last. So it might be that it's not as economical, but it's easier to get into because you're talking about hundreds versus thousands. You know what I'm saying? But over the long haul, it might be more economical to go Wacom Cintiq. So I don't know, but it worked, and I finished a painting. It's on my YouTube channel, but it's old, and I wouldn't count on it for current information today. It's probably like 4 years old. So, I mean, everything changes in technology so fast that information is, you know, passe.
And I guess one of the last things we should talk about, I don't know if we're wrapping it up, but it seems like we're sort of wrapping it up. Independently of what technology you're using or what media you're using, all of it comes down to really how you use these things. I used to teach a costume figure drawing class, and I think I've talked about this on this podcast before, but I used to go in there and I would bring my son's 64 pack of Crayola crayons, and I would do a whole class with that as demos, because you don't want to get stuck needing your magic pen or your magic technology. Otherwise you can't make art. I mean, all this stuff is nice to have. I mean, we've talked about them as essentials and all that stuff, but you still the art is the most important thing, and you can make that with, you know, a cheap brush and some coffee. If you dip it in the coffee, I mean, so bringing yourself to it and figuring out what kind of images you want to make may be another thing that drives you to the choices that you're going to make. But you don't need a bunch of expensive stuff. But focus on the images too. And you know, we do use all this technology, but it comes down to the images you want to make.
I have always maintained, if you gave someone like Caravaggio a pocket knife and a tree branch, he could probably outpaint just about anybody.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so it's really what's in your head. It's not the tools, but then again, it is the tools. Why is it both? I mean, there's certain things you can't do with a tree branch either. So, you know, you would be able to do a thick impasto painting probably, but you wouldn't be able to make nice rigger lines, you know, from a rigger brush with a tree branch.
Right. I mean, I've used cheap, you know, like I can't do with the Tombow marker what I can do with my Copic brush pen that I was talking about. I just can't get that thick to thin on those types of pens. It doesn't mean that I can't sit down and draw something really cool, but it just isn't going to have the same.
Yeah, it's, you're talking about nuance at this point. We've been doing it for so long that all of us can instantly tell when something's not right. Kind of like Will was talking about that other knockoff Cintiq. You just know it immediately.
Yeah. All right. I think we'll wrap it up there. I wanted to talk a little bit about organization. Like, what do you guys use to organize your studios? But that's non-essential for this particular episode. So let's wrap it up. Thank you for joining us, everybody. 3-point perspective is made possible by svslearn.com, where becoming a great illustrator starts. And your hosts here have been Will Terry. You can find his work on Instagram at Will Terry Art. That's his handle. And his website is willterry.com. Lee White, his Instagram handle is at Lee White Illo, and his website is leewhiteillustration.com. And I'm Jake Parker. My Instagram account is at Jake Parker, and you could find more of my work on my website at mrjakeparker.com. Special thanks to podcast editor Alex Sugg. You can follow his work or contact him or do whatever you need to do. I don't know where this is going. At alexsugg.com. And show notes, as always, by the talented Tanner Garlick. His website is tannergarlickart.com. And if you go to the svslearn.com website and click on podcasts, that's where all of our show notes are. That's where you're going to find links to all of these tools that we've talked about today, where you can get, you know, that particular pen or brush or buy a Cintiq or whatever. And those are on the svslearn.com website. Also, Tanner's been doing an illustration for each one of these podcast episodes, and they're amazing. So you go through there and you can see all of his illustrations that he's done for each of these. So if you like this episode, please share it around. We appreciate everybody who's been sharing the podcast on Twitter, on Instagram, wherever we've seen it. It's so cool to see you guys sharing this podcast, and we appreciate it. If you haven't yet, please subscribe to us on whatever platform you listen to podcasts on. And if you do subscribe on iTunes, leave a review. We love reading those, and we love hearing what you guys think about it. If you're wanting to join in on this discussion, we have a thread on the svslearn.com forums. So log on over there. It's free to join. And we've posted this episode in its own thread. So chime in. Let us know what you think. Let us know what tools you like to use. Let us know where we're wrong. And we appreciate that. Thanks, everybody. And we'll see you next time.